Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
Well, if you ever catch yourself thinking when looking in the mirror, I wish my under-eye bags would just go away. You're not alone. Bags and puffiness under the eyes are a problem for millions of American men and women. Until now, introducing my new favorite, the new GenuCell Serum with plant stem cell technology from Chamonix. Susan from New Jersey wrote me, I've been using GenuCell for a couple months. The puffiness around my eyes is gone. Even the crow's feet and small lines have disappeared and haven't come back. I love this product. I use it under my eyes, around the cheekbones, and on my eyelids. With its instant effects, Chamonix says you'll see results in the first 12 hours or your money back. They guarantee it. Order now and save big on GenuCell's risk-free introductory offer. Go to lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. That's G-E-N-U-C-E-L. For an instant 10% off your order, order now. You'll get the amazing GenuCell XV face cream when you order the exclusive GenuCell most popular package at checkout. That's love, GenuCell.com/Stephanie. lovegenucell.com/Stephanie.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm Kimberly, fully vaccinated Johnson in D.C. today. My returning guest is Ben Cohen of Banter. Woohoo! Love talking to Ben. Now, before we get into the conversation, I do try to keep these intros short. I have a tier on Patreon, though, that allows listeners to listen ad-free and with a much shorter intro. The Start Me Up podcast is an independent podcast supported by listeners, and it's woman-run. It's patrons who keep the show going, and I'm so grateful. If you do enjoy today's show, take a look at the About page, check out some of my past guests. Most of the time, I talk to political people. Sometimes I talk to actors, because I used to be one. But just visit patreon.com/startmeup. I do two free shows a week on Mondays and Wednesdays, and they're followed up by the What's Up show, which is just me alone talking about whatever I feel like, kind of like an online diary. I also do one patrons-only show with a guest once a month. Just check out the variety of tier options at patreon.com/startmeup. You can make a one-time donation by checking out the text in the Patreon description. I've included a link that makes it easy to donate through PayPal. You can find Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever podcasts are found. Just stop by the iTunes app, Apple Podcasts store, become a subscriber. It's free. And while you're there, if you like the show, please rate it and leave a review. I would really appreciate it. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Ben Cohen. Welcome back to the show, Ben.
Thanks so much for having me, Kimberly.
Well, today I'm not in a great mood because I follow the news and I'm having a difficult time. Last Wednesday was a very hard day for me. I mean, all last week was tough. Manchin's freaking me out. We're going to talk about that. Manchin's freaking me out. All these things are freaking me out. And so I talked to Jared Yates Sexton, and I was pretty much on the verge of tears the entire phone call, or the entire show, I should say. But we do it on the phone. But it was very difficult for me. So I kind of got better. You know, I got myself out of that upset funk thing. I did talk to author and lawyer Terry Canfield on Monday. And she definitely has a way, which is, I'm leading up to something to ask you, but she's got this way about her. She's a lawyer, and she sees things through those eyes, through the lens of a lawyer, which is not necessarily a Democratic leader or somebody who's just a pundit or anything like that. And I think, you know, I think overall she made some really good points. One of the points she made was Biden is doing well in the polls, and if he continues, this really bodes well for Democrats. And I agree that that could bode well for Democrats, but the things that are freaking me out is watching how the Republican Party is going full fascism. They're still attempting their coup. It's just a fairly slow-moving coup, not that slow, but we can see it in real time. And then I look at the Democrats, and I'm feeling that they're not, it's not a Democrat bash thing. It's just, I don't feel that they're strong enough right now. I don't feel they're fighting to win. I think they're like acting like they're dealing with a bush or something like that, and that, you know, assuming there's going to be smooth transitions of power in the future. So all that said, I just kind of want to gauge, because I do this with everybody, but I want to gauge what you're, you know, how you're feeling about this whole big picture thing, about how what's happening with the Democratic Party, how they're handling things. Maybe you feel confident. I don't know. How do you feel about it?
So that's a very complex
question. Yes, it is.
It's a very complex question. And I think, like you, you know, you go through sort of ups and downs according to mm-hmm. the news cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the things I'll say is that it's very difficult to really know what's going on behind
yes,
scenes.
Right? You're
you
right.
hear you snippets in the media, you hear, you know, spokesmen for Joe Manchin or various senators or various, you know, people in Congress or the president, what they're saying about stuff, but we have really no idea what's going on mm-hmm. behind the scenes. What kind of pressure is being put on Joe Manchin? What kind of, you know, is there a carrot and a stick, you know, mm-hmm. like, so, you know, for, if you look at left-wing Twitter, the sort of more Bernie left Twitter, they are incensed and outraged that the Democrats are not fighting hard enough. The more moderate Democrats are urging everybody to keep calm mm-hmm. And to not, you know, go full throttle at Joe Manchin and to wait for talks behind the scenes to play themselves out. I find myself in this funny position where I'm not entirely sure mm-hmm. what the best way to deal with this is, right? I mean, Joe Manchin is Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Those are the problems, mm-hmm. right? That we have
right.
we have a big problem. We can't get things passed unless the filibuster goes or the filibuster mm-hmm. gets reformed. You know, there's only so much that can be done through reconciliation, and mm-hmm. there's no real guarantee that they're going to get on board. Joe Manchin's not necessarily going to get on board, you know, things passing things through reconciliation either. So mm-hmm. Manchin has a huge amount of power mm-hmm. and influence at the moment, and I don't quite get what his game is. You know, it seems bizarre. He's holding out. I don't, you know, he obviously understands politics in West Virginia better than anybody else does. This is all clearly related to his own political survival, I think. I'm not sure how much of this is to do with a genuine desire for bipartisanship, because the evidence it clearly shows that there is no such thing, not really. Mm-hmm. You know, there are about 5 Republican senators who are willing to negotiate on anything in good faith. The rest of them are, yeah. you know, they're Trump loyalists and maximalists. You know, they're power mm-hmm. maximalists. They all they're interested in doing is destroying Joe Biden and ensuring yeah. that Republicans control every branch of government.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find myself in this funny position where I don't know what's going to happen. I think probably that infrastructure is going to go through reconciliation. They're going to have to make some. I think that will get done. Some form of it will get done. They'll just have to negotiate with Manchin as to what he wants. Unfortunately, he mm-hmm. has power.
Yeah.
I think HR1, I think the voting rights stuff, we can kiss that goodbye until 2022. Right. The only real, I think, the chance of getting that through has to be through expanding the Democrats' majority in the mm-hmm. Senate, which means they've got to hold the House too. They have yes. to hold the House. They have to expand on the House. And this is a big ask. This is a big,
yes,
big, big
it is.
Ask.
Yes, it is. If we don't have HR1 and, you know, we're fighting against history, because history shows us, for the most part, with the exception of like 2018 and maybe a few others, when you have what we have right now, which is basically a majority, I mean, it's a very slim one, but we have a majority. So history tells us that in the midterms, the opposing party is going to, you know, win. And I think that it didn't happen in 2018. Well, actually, no, it did happen in 2018. Because they held all the branches, and then the Democrats won the House. So
took back the House. They didn't yeah. take back the Senate. They didn't take back the Senate.
Right.
You know, so I think that there is a decent chance that the Democrats can expand their majority in the Senate. So that is yeah. a good thing. The House, I think, looks a bit trickier.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is going to come down to serious, serious grassroots movements, you know, trying to mm-hmm. lay the foundation mm-hmm. for a messaging war heading into 2022, right? So, you know, the from what I understand, that is happening. Mm-hmm. You know, Democratic, there are groups, powerful groups, who are organizing right now. I think that, you know, you can, with every bad situation, with every disaster, there is an opportunity.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it might seem really bad right now, but there are some things I think the Democrats can use to their advantage. Like, for example, if you have, if they can't get HR1 passed, the best way to do this, I think, is through messaging, right? Is to pin the blame squarely on Republicans for this.
Yeah.
Right. To avoid going off of Joe Manchin and blaming everything on Joe Manchin, you have to go, which may or may not be, I understand the progressive rage at Joe Manchin, I get that, but it's more important, I think, to pin the blame on Republicans, who are actually, it's not that they're not trying to pass to block HR1, they're actively trying to suppress votes.
Yeah.
Right, so hang this around their necks, right? Mm-hmm. That's got to be a huge, and what, you know, what we saw in 2020 was mass voter turnout.
Yeah.
Right, that the GOP voter suppression tactics worked against them because they kept trying to suppress the vote, and it can activate the base, right? And you want as many people engaged in the midterms as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And one way to do that is to basically create a very, very powerful campaign against the Republicans and highlight their attempts to suppress the vote.
Yeah, and I certainly hope that works, because I would assume that's what's going on. In fact, actor Kirk Acevedo tweeted out about how, you know, the Democratic Party is not reaching out to Latino voters, and he did this whole thing about, you know, how many there are and how important they are to the party. And so I retweeted that, and then because he's been talking about this for some time. In fact, he was complaining about the Democratic National Convention because the Latino people that were, you know, I want to call it on that program, it seemed like a program, but at the convention, were people that were very privileged, you know, actors. I can't remember the woman's name, and it'll come to me in a minute, but you know, and the woman is a Democrat, and she's a huge advocate and everything, but she's not in touch with the average everyday Latino. And so his whole point, like, he was making a point, I don't know, a couple of months ago, saying, you know, you need to have, and he was, oh God, he was talking about some, excuse me, some fighter or something like that, that is really popular. And he's like, you need to have real Latino people going out into these, wherever there's a large Latino population. I mean, he's in California, so of course there's a lot of Latinos in California. But, you know, you need to go out and talk to them in languages they can understand. You know what I mean? In messaging they can understand. Not from, like, an elite millionaire actress that they don't understand. And so anyway, I had tagged Jamie Harrison, head of the DNC, and so then I saw, you know, Kirk liked that, and then he tagged Jamie Harrison, and Jamie Harrison replied, and he said, we're on it, although he did not specify that they were going after Latino voters. He was just saying, oh, we're knocking on doors, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. And so I truly hope, one thing that I think is a positive is that with social media, we do have the opportunity to get the attention of people like Jamie Harrison and get our, you know, messages directly into their ears. And I hope that they take that to heart, and I hope that they do it, because I agree with you that if we have numbers too big to ignore, we can overcome this. But it's like you said, it's a big ask.
It's a big ask, but, you know, look, I think that there are ways of doing this. I mean, there was an interesting post-mortem of the 2020 election. I wrote a piece about this on the Banter. You know, and it kind of looked at where the Democrats didn't do very well in 2020, and there were three major progressive groups, three major Democratic groups that took part in this. I forget the names of those particular groups, but one of them was a Latino-based one, and it's pretty interesting, you know. And it just basically, you know, the Democrats' messaging to a lot. There are lots of demographics that the Democrats' messaging is not great.
Mm-hmm.
And the GOP is very, very, very skilled at manipulating it, and, you know, basically feeding this into the culture wars, you know, and trying to convince everyday Americans that Democrats are baby killing, right. You know, socialist monsters. And, you know, and that has a sort of a knock on effect, right? And it has a knock on effect to a lot of these communities who don't necessarily pay huge amounts of attention to what's going on. But, you know, they watch the news and they're reasonably well informed. But the opinions that they're going to fight, that you see in a lot of these communities, are that the Democrats are kind of extremists. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't do well. That's not going to do well in 2022. Right? That's spells disaster for them. So they have to really sort their messaging out, and they really have to, you know. So for example, like, you know, my wife is Latina, and, you know, so I spend a lot of time around the Latino community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their concerns are not what you would necessarily hear from, as you say, like famous actresses.
Eva Longoria. It's Eva Longoria. I couldn't remember her name. I remember her name now. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she that's big in kind of, you know, East Coast, West Coast, big city.
Right. Yes.
With big city liberals and potentially young people, but your average kind of Latino is not particularly interested in what Eva Longoria has to say about anything. They're right. Interested in keeping their business afloat.
Yes.
They're
yes.
Interested in, you know, making sure that they've got some, you know, they can send their kids to school, mm-hmm. Things like that, you know, so they're not necessarily in line with, you know, the people on Twitter and things like that. So yeah. I think the Democrats have got a big job to do right there. And I think Joe Biden, like that's where I think Joe Biden's kind of brand of you know, what does it mean to be a Democrat is quite effective. And that's what helped him win in 2020, at least from my perspective. Mm-hmm. Right. He was this sort of blue collar Democrat. You know, he took the party back to its roots, you know, the party of African Americans. This is, you know, James Carville's description, and it turned out to be right. You know, it's whether you like it or agree with it,
right,
or not.
Right.
I mean, again, like I don't have any. I'm like the flimsiest demo. Like, I whoever will win against a Republican, I'm for that person. You know, I don't really care like what the tactic is, or you know, if we have to. Where are the numbers? Where are the votes?
Right.
How do we get those votes? That's what I'm concerned about. So I think you've got to be extremely ruthless about this, just as the Republican Party is extremely ruthless about that. So this is where I'm hoping that the Democrats really get their act together for 2022. I think Biden is doing a very good job. He's doing a really good job. He's got a lot of problems. Like, you're dealing with, you know, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Mm-hmm. In the Senate, that's no easy task. This was always going to happen. This is what happened with Obama. Obama had almost like a bulletproof Senate majority back in, you know, in 2008, and he could still. I mean, what it took to get the Affordable Care Act passed was just was, when you read about it, it's crazy what they had to do to get it over the line. You know, and that was no fault of Obama's. That wasn't his fault. And everyone likes to complain about Obama. He's too weak. He's too soft. He's not strong enough. He's not, you know. But that's not how politics works. In you know, there are lots of different power bases that you have to appeal to. You know, it's just a reality. Joe Manchin, it's better that Democrats get this around their heads. That this is a reality. This is like, you have to deal with this as a reality. He's not going to suddenly get on board, end the filibuster, you know, pass HR1 and the infrastructure bill that everybody wants. We're not going to get exactly what we want, but we can get something done.
Well, you know what, I just kind of like off subject from that, but I know you used to live in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So, I know Los Angeles is blue, or California is blue. So it's not that I'm saying that, you know, is California going to change us, but... or change the, you know, the map or anything like that. And hopefully it wouldn't. But the other day, just for fun, I went on Google and I went up to, I used to live in Silver Lake, California. And I wanted to kind of see, you know, go to where I used to live. And then I just did that thing where you can, in, you know, real time go through the streets. And I wanted to kind of walk to school, see my old route to walking to school. And just as I was getting to, it was, my school's on Fountain Avenue. It was on the corner. Well, it's not the corner, but it was like the cross of Sunset and Fountain. You would make a right.
I used to live just off there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I went to high school in Los Feliz, actually.
Oh, well, really? Which high school did you go to?
I went to the Lycée International.
Oh, wow. Lycée
International of Los Angeles. It's a small French school.
Interesting.
Up in the hills.
Yeah, I can't remember the high school that I would have gone to if we stayed there, because I lived in Silver Lake, but there was a high school. It was around Hyperion. And I just can't remember.
Yeah, I know exactly the high school that you're talking about. It was near to where I went to high school.
Right. Okay. So anyway, I would walk basically down Sunset Boulevard, and then I would make a right on Fountain. And so as I was doing that in Google Maps, I saw all these tents on the sidewalk. And I remembered that even pre-COVID, my friend was telling me that there's this huge homeless situation in Los Angeles. And she said it's really bad now, because, of course, I miss Los Angeles, and I'll always talk to her about missing Los Angeles. She's like, you don't really miss it, because A, B, C, and D. And one of those was that the homeless population is just growing and growing, because obviously rents are going up and everything. But I'm wondering if... And I know that this is its local thing. It's in California. It's not across the United States. But I'm just wondering if something like that would have an effect in the bigger picture, because it was very jarring for me to see that. And now, granted, that's an urban area, right? There's Los Feliz and Silver Lake. It's city. You know, it's, there are homes and people, you know, there's lots of families living around there, but it's kind of a city atmosphere. And so even, you know, I was back in the 80s, I was walking to school. Of course, occasionally I would see homeless people and things like that. But I never saw tents on the sidewalk. And I'm hearing, you know, I know also in Santa Monica, there's a huge homeless problem, huge, to the point where I've heard people complain about the odor because of the homeless people. And I'm not saying this to mock or be nasty or mean in any way. It's a terrible problem that needs to be taken care of. And it seems that it's only growing. And I just, you know, I wonder if it's happening in California, and granted, California rents and mortgages and all that, or you know, housing prices and all that, are just getting higher and higher and higher. In fact, I saw a post, this woman was saying she lives in Northern California, that people who have very large backyards are buying these homes that are like 650 square feet. They're like $300,000, and you literally take a crane and pop it in the backyard for your like parents, or if you want to rent it out or something like that, because prices are going up so much. So like, I think the question I'm asking is like, do you think that even though that's California and California is California, it's still part of the United States, we're still seeing all kinds of, you know, inflation and high rents and things like that. Do you think that's going to play a part in the way people vote? Do you think they put those things together, that what, you know, who you vote? I mean, it seems to me people don't put it together a lot of the time. Think politics are separate.
Yeah, they'll blame, you know, whoever's in power, they'll blame, right? So, you know, if the Republicans spend their entire time, this is what invariably happens, right? Republicans wreck everything. A Democrat comes in to clean up. Don't have quite enough time to clean things up. Republicans then blame Democrats for the mess that they created, get elected again, make things worse, you know, rinse and repeat.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that they, again, and this, it does, a lot of this comes down to messaging. And so they're going to have to get, they really, really, really have to work on their messaging.
Yeah.
But this is where I think, you know, I like to listen to the Pod Save America podcast quite a lot, but it's pretty interesting from the perspective of people who actually worked in the Obama administration. And one thing I've noticed when I listen to those guys is that what they constantly talk about is messaging. Mm-hmm. They constantly talk about how are the Democrats communicating this to the public. And I understand to them, that's what politics is. It's a messaging war.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democrats really, 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 really need to step this up.
Yes, they do.
Right. You know, they allow Republicans to control the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And once Republicans control the narrative, you know, it's theirs to win, basically. They have to blame the blame. You know, apparently, you know, now Biden's apparently blowing up the deficit and Biden's weak on Putin. And it's like, wait a second. This is insane. How can you? This is insane.
Yeah.
You know, this is absolutely insane that you could blame Biden for the deficit. And say that he's too weak on Putin. Like, we nobody paying attention for the past 4 years.
That's
the case. Yeah, that's the case, you know. And I this is why I think it's important to have very, very savvy, a very savvy messaging campaign, and to not allow the one thing that that I worry about the most is that when the more progressive left get control of the narrative, this is when I start to worry. Because it's not that I don't necessarily agree with them. It's because I worry about how that plays with the demographics that Democrats desperately need to get.
Yeah, and that's a reasonable approach, because I feel the same way. I mean, it's interesting because last, I don't know, let's say 2019, before we even had the Democratic primaries, Elizabeth Warren was my first choice. And my whole stance on this was like, people in this country will say a woman can't win. And it's like, well, a woman can win if you vote for her. And I maintain that logic. But I will say, you know, that during the primary, when it became clear that Biden was the nominee, I mean, it didn't take very long. It didn't take long for me to understand he was the best person. He was the man of that moment. It doesn't even necessarily mean he's going to be the best president or the most effective leader or anything like that, but he was the person to get us out of that situation. And I think it turns out, for the most part, and so far, Biden's been doing a really good job. You know, I know there's always going to be criticism of any president. Some of it's warranted, some of it's just nitpicking. But I think in the bigger picture right now, where we're standing, I think he's doing a good job. I like, you know, he's got a huge high approval rating. So, and if he can maintain that, that's going to bode well for the midterms. At least, you know, it's going to hopefully bode well for the Democrats in midterms. But it's just, and I am in agreement with the fact that we have to message, you know, I was talking to Rachel Bitticoffer, and she started a PAC, and she wants to use fear to basically motivate Democratic voters. And unfortunately, that's really what it takes. I mean, you know, people say they don't like negative ads, but they respond to negative ads. People, you know, it's like people complain about, the funny thing is it's like you complain about certain kinds of messaging, but if you just look on Facebook, if you tweet something, if you fear monger, you're going to get all the fucking likes and tweets and retweets and all that. If you tell the truth about certain things, specifically climate or like the Equal Rights Amendment, it's just, it's like, you know, you get a little bit of attention. So people absolutely respond to fear messages, and they also respond to the negative ads, and it sucks, but that's what they respond to. They can, you know, scream about it all day long. You know, we don't like them. Well, they work on you. You know, I mean, they're working. And so I do agree with Rachel Bitticoffer in that. I mean, I don't think Democrats should fear monger, but I think that they should use the fact that we are on the fucking brink right now to motivate people to get to the polls. Because it's like, if you don't vote now, we could lose everything. And when Terry Canfield was on, I do want to say, like, you know, and she's not here, so she can't counter me, but she was saying, you know, people are saying, that's it, it's all over. Now, I don't think we should say that right now, because it's not all over. We still have time. But as far as she says, if we lose, how did she say something along the lines of, like, well, if we lose, then we lose everything forever. And she says that's not true, because, you know, in Chile, they had an autocrat and they eventually overcame. But the issue here is, if we lose, if the fascists win, God only knows how long it would take to get back to any kind of a democracy. And it would be a new democracy. It would pretty much have to be built from scratch. And then it would also does not take into account climate change. And, you know, there are some scientists out there that say we have 10 years. There are some that say we've already passed the tipping point. I don't know what the real answer is, but I don't want to mess around with it. And if there is some time left that we can fix some things, then I think that we should do that. And I don't know what else other than fear or anger, because did you see Steve Scalise was saying that, did you see that video that's been going around from Steve Scalise?
No, I didn't. What,
oh my
was,
God.
What
so he said after, okay, this is just a quote. There's a lot more to it, but he says after the baby has come out of the womb alive, in some states, they're killing that baby and calling it abortion. So there was a tape of him saying that. And
Oh my God.
And so it's like that shit works on their side. I mean, one thing I wanted to ask you, because you did bring up the fact that they're fear mongering, it's not necessarily going to work. So in that case, I mean, he's in Louisiana, but he says some states, right? So he's just basically throwing it out there that some states that he shall not name are doing this. Do you think that that's going to work against them, or do you think it's going to work for them?
What with the talking about the
Republicans, abortion. Just Republicans in general, that kind of messaging.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sadly, I think it does work.
Yeah.
It works for Republicans when they use that. But equally, you know, the thing is, it works for Democrats too. You know, if abortion rights are under threat, that there, you know, that's how you motivate particularly women to get to the polls.
Yeah.
Right. To go and vote. Right.
Right? Yeah.
So I think it has a counter. There's always a, you know, there's always a response to that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the more Republicans use these tactics, the more it does feed into, the worse it gets, mm-hmm. the more the Democrats can use it to, you know, motivate their own base. And you're absolutely right. They absolutely do need to use fear to get the base out, because we should be frightened about what's happening. You should absolutely be frightened about what the Republicans are trying to do to the country. I mean, it's like you're right. I mean, it's a slow moving fascist coup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not even that. It's not even very slow moving.
No.
They're not even pretending
right.
to care about democracy at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, right. But this is why I think that the Democrats, they do need to focus a lot more on what the key issues are. And the issues right now is going to be the economy. It's going to be the economy, and it's going to be the economy, right?
Yeah.
And these are the things that people care about, right? These mm-hmm. are the things. These are the issues that people really want to, you know, they're not interested in debates about gender pronouns. They're not interested
right.
in debates about. It's not that these aren't important things, right?
Right.
No matter where you stand on these issues, right? They are, of course, you know, these are things that I have opinions about. I want, you know, I want to hear healthy debate about these mm-hmm. kind of things. But I want to, you know, really what most people are interested in is how are their business going to survive? How are
yeah.
they going to pay for grocery bills?
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to pay their rent? How are they going to put, you know, the cost of everything keeps going up. Like, what does the future look like? What does the future look like for me and my family? And
yeah.
and it's, the more Democrats get sidetracked with other debates and purity tests and things like that, I think the worse it gets for them. The Republicans are very good at basically creating it. They have like a laser-like focus on divisive issues that allows them to kind of motivate their base.
Yeah.
And the Democrats need to do. You just need to do the same thing. You need to do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
They're
very key issues that they focus on that, and that's what's going to win you elections.
Yeah, basically just hone in on the fear of not having the job to pay the bills or whatever it is. So it's not fear of taking away your guns or something like that, or, you know, fear of Democrats killing babies or some bullshit like that. But it's like
right.
real world fear of, you know what, if we don't get this... If we don't get this right, we're never going to have a smooth transition. It will be an autocratic country, period. It'll just basically, it'll be a just different version of modern Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Democracy is under threat. Healthcare is under threat. And government assistance for college, government assistance
yeah.
for childcare, government assistance for if you don't have a job. This is all going. It's all going to go if they get back control. So, you know... This is how I think you need to motivate people.
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's how you have to do it. But, you know, real quick, we're going to take a little break and we'll be back with more fun after this message. There's so much going on in the world that can make it difficult to relax and decompress. You've experienced the Sunday scaries, that feeling of dread in the pit of your stomach that comes on Sunday afternoons. Now here's a totally different Sunday scaries, vitamin-boosted CBD gummies. And you don't even have to wait until Sunday night rolls around. Self-care is so important, and Sunday scaries is here to help. Sunday scaries believes that everyone deserves a hand on a difficult day. So if you're looking for a way to decompress, Sunday Scaries has you covered with their CBD products. Visit SundayScaries.com and use the promo code SEXYLIBERAL, all one word, at the checkout and get 25% off your order. That's 25% off at SundayScaries.com with promo code SEXYLIBERAL. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. These products are not for use by sale or to persons under the age of 18. Okay, we're back. All right. Now I'm going to switch the subject a little bit, going into a different direction. And I don't remember if I asked you this the last time, but have you been watching the Q documentary?
I haven't. This on my to-do list. Okay. It's absolutely, I've listened to podcasts about the Q documentary, but I know what it's about, but I haven't seen it yet. And I am looking forward to it. I'm terrified.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And, I will say this though, the FBI just released something today that Q is going, you know, the QAnon movement, they're going to stop digital activity and they're going to take it to the streets and kill Democrats. Now, this is great. Really frightening because, you know, I was talking to my mom about this morning and she, you know, and she, I said something like, this is why I don't like to put Democratic or liberal bumper stickers on my car. Because in this day and age, I feel like a target. And she was saying something like, well, I think they're focusing on leaders. And it's like, yeah, but if you're in, I don't know, anywhere, I mean, you could be in the bluest of blue states, but you've got people who are QAnon people who live there. And they are, you know, that I think what's going to happen if we start seeing this actually play out, we're going to see more bold actions just from regular QAnons hitting up regular people. And that is really scaring the shit out of me. I mean, obviously the FBI knows about it. They put out a warning. But this is something we all have to be aware of right now, which is really frightening.
Yeah. It's absolutely terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. Yeah. You've got, these aren't fascists. These are worse than fascists. Yeah. They're completely insane. You know, and again, this is what we are voting against, right?
Yes.
This is what we're, you know, this is what people need to get out and go and vote for because of this, because your democracy is in peril, and you've got a lot of crazy people who are out there willing to. Well, we've seen what they're willing to do. They're willing to try and overthrow the government,
right? Yeah, there. And the thing is it's like some of these people are Obama voters. And they're QAnons. And I'm telling you, when you watch, it's a fairly long documentary. And I don't know how many parts there are to it. I don't know where we are. We just watched one on Sunday and it was like stomach churning. It was just like, oh my God, because you're realizing, I mean, you pretty much know who Q is at the end of the documentary, and I won't give anything away. I think there was a bit of a giveaway and the documentary filmmakers said, okay, this is who we believe it is. But if you watch the documentary, you pretty much figure out who it is, and you realize that these people are chaos agents and they're just having fun. They're just having fun watching, they drop a bomb and watching how everyone freaks out. That's how they're getting their rocks off. And it's unbelievable because even though, you know, I mean, you've got Michael Flynn who is buying all this shit. It's like, is he buying it or is he using it? I don't know, but either way, It's going against the United States. I mean, he was one of the featured speakers at the QAnon convention over Memorial Day in Texas. And that's when it was announced that, you know, Trump was, I don't know if it's that's where it was announced, but it was right around that time it came out that Trump believes in August he's going to be reinstated. And to me, all that means is he's clearly not going to be reinstated. But because he isn't, QAnon people and these fascists and these Trump supporters and all the MAGA, that's going to be another it's going to be another reason to incite violence, and we don't know what's going to happen. Like, obviously they are planning and they are organized, and I just, you know, I mean, I don't even know what that's going to mean
outside
right.
of violence.
I mean, I think the only thing that we've got working for us is how stupid they are. That's the only thing. I mean, it was like the attempted coup. You know, thankfully, they were morons.
Right.
Right. I mean, it really was one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Yeah. I mean, it was obviously terrifying, but it's also incredibly sad to see these very kind of desperate middle-aged men with absolutely nothing going on in their lives, dressed in military garb, trying to, you know, overthrow the government. I mean, it was pathetic.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the thing about the QAnon followers is that they are basically mostly, I would say, for the most part, sad little men.
Yes. Yeah, and women, because there are women,
well. you know, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ashley Babbitt, and you know, but the vast majority of them are pathetic middle-aged men who have nothing else to do with their lives, who are angry and bitter at, you know, how their lives have turned out, and they've, you know, I listened to a really excellent podcast called Conspirituality. Mm-hmm. It's the Conspirituality podcast. It's very interesting, and it looks at the sort of intersection between the wellness industry and conspiracy theorists, and how kind of QAnon is like the perfect kind of, it's the perfect sort of blend of new age conspiracy theory with disaffected, you know, political zealots as well.
Right.
And how there's this movement that incorporates these completely insane theories, including kind of health and healthcare and, you know, supplements and shamanism and with political conspiracy theories. And it's incredibly dangerous. And a lot of what they discuss is how vulnerable people are to these conspiracy theories. And I think that that's what's happened. You've got a lot of the population that have been fed a steady diet of Fox News and, you know, right-wing hate radio, and their lives are shitty, and they turn to these wild conspiracy theories to make up these horrible holes in their lives. And there's a lot of them, you know, there are a lot of them out there, and Trump's managed to tap into all of them.
And it's just I did a patrons only that's going to also air today after I post this one, but I've already recorded it, and basically it's a relative of mine who's a mega Trump supporter, and unfortunately I had to talk to this person the other day. And you know, I think that something that you said, some of these people, I think that what happens with a lot of them is they're angry and upset over things in their own life that they either can't control or are unwilling to face, unwilling to control, and their anger, you know, the Q and the Trump and all the MAGA messaging and all that basically gives them this target to be angry at and blame. And, you know, I look at my MAGA, I have a few MAGA relatives, and I think the same thing about both of them. You know, I mean, and the really weird thing is that I love my relatives, and it's funny because I will share some information. Like, for instance, I shared this on Twitter that my, and I just say my MAGA relative, but, and I'll say she, but anyway, she told me that her, now the person who gave her shot, and I think she referred to this person as a doctor, but I don't know who gave her shot, and I think it was a Johnson & Johnson shot. So she said the person who gave her shot said, there's no need for a booster. And, you know, I took COVID really fucking seriously. I still do. And, you know, I washed everything. I was very, very cautious. Now, I didn't talk to her for, you know, very much during the pandemic, or during the time when I wasn't vaccinated, I should say, because the pandemic is still going on. But I hide, reply, and block on Twitter when anybody spreads disinformation. So anyway, I said to her, when we were talking and she said that she didn't need a booster, I mentioned the variants, and her voice got real loud. Now, she wasn't like yelling at me, like she was angry at me, but it was this weird automatic defensive behavior. And I don't think this defensive behavior comes from them knowing they're wrong. I think they expect it from anybody who is following science and understanding what the truth is, and they know they're going to get met with a debate there. So it's like she's automatically prepared to start the conversation yelling and getting her point across. And it was like, oh my God. And so, you know, I mean, we were talking about masks and we were talking about herd immunity, and all the information she had was wrong. But, you know, I still go back to this whole thing. I think these people have certain things that upset them in their lives and they don't want to face it. So Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and Tucker Carlson and all these people say, you know who the real threat is? It's those Democrats, and they eat babies, and they do, you know. And it's like, it's how do you even you can't, I don't know that you can rehabilitate their minds because they've been completely brainwashed.
Yeah, and I you know, I would certainly urge people to check out the Conspirituality podcast as well, because they do a lot of research and and talk to experts on this about what happens to people when they get involved with these conspiracy theories and these communities. And like what you're saying is, you know, it's absolutely kind of spot on, right? It's like they get lost somehow, and you know, there's certainly a chance that they can't come back from it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, it's a sad thing to kind of come to terms with, that people that you know and who you care about can't come back to consensus reality.
Yeah, right? Like people on Twitter will say, "Oh, just cut them out of your life." It's like, I can't just cut them out of my life.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I think if they are in your life, I think, you know, one of the best ways to kind of deal with it is to not push them on it, because facts and logic and reasoning doesn't
work.
It doesn't work. It really doesn't work. And you know, maybe, you know, there are instances. There's a lot of people who do come back from this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of instances of people coming back from being in cults, and QAnon is a cult. And there are prominent examples of people who got involved in the QAnon nonsense who have come back to consensus reality. They're still, you know, bit shaky, you know, the foundation isn't particularly strong.
Right.
But you know, they can come back. But it probably takes quite a long time, and it also isn't easy, you know, and I get it. I think that when you're dealing with it online, for example, people spreading conspiracy theories, like, there are, I think the best tactic with that is to block those people, and not necessarily because you're trying to be mean to them, but you're trying to stop them from spreading disinformation. Yes,
that's it. Yeah.
Right. That's the best way to do it. Right. Yeah. You've got to treat. I read somewhere, I can't remember who it was. It's some guy who runs he's the president of a organization that tries to stop digital hate, and his suggestion, I forget the name of the organization, but it's an interesting organization. But one of the bit of advice that he has is that you need to treat these people like they are the virus itself.
Yeah.
Not necessarily as a bad person per se, but that they are they're contagious.
Yes.
Their ideas are contagious. So you don't interact with them, and you don't engage with them, and you don't like reply to them or try to debate with them. You cut them off. You report them. And you block them, right? Report them to Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, whatever it is, and you block them, and you make sure that you essentially inoculate yourself from from the virus, right? It's like, and because disinformation is a virus, so they need to be isolated. They need to be online. In real life, it's a whole different story, right? And it's a lot more complicated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people who have MAGA relatives. You know, I don't have anybody in my direct family who is involved in that stuff, but I know a lot of people who do.
Yeah.
It's more complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that easy. Like Justin Rosario, who writes for the band, he has MAGA in-laws, and he's cut them off completely.
Well, you know, I won't get into it with this particular person. You know, when she was saying the things that she was saying, I could feel, you know, like I said, this is all in my patrons only show today. So if anybody wants to hear more of the details, but, you know, the difficulty I had when she was saying certain things, I did try to counter it. But basically the way I got through it was I said, well, this is how I feel comfortable. And, you know, because we were talking about masks, and she said something like, you know, that you don't have to wear masks. And I said, well, in some cases I will, because, you know, from what I understand, you can be fully vaccinated, you can carry the COVID virus and maybe pass it on to a child who has not been vaccinated. Now, I don't know that this is an absolute, but I've heard this, and I don't even know if there is absolute information on this, but either way, I feel like, you know what, taking a little bit of a precaution. I mean, I have a niece that I've already seen in person, and I was not wearing a mask because I am going to be in close proximity. I was outside with her, but I will be in close proximity with her, you know, in the next couple of weeks. I haven't seen her for a while, so I know I'm going to be at, you know, my dad's house, and she'll be there, and I'm not going to wear a mask around her. But, you know, when I go to the grocery store or something like that, I feel like everything that's happening right now is happening in real time, and in 2 or 3 months we might get a little different information. And it's not because the science is wrong. It's not because it's maybe the science isn't fully there yet, and sometimes there's human error. And so, you know, instead of just jumping back like nothing is wrong anymore with this new variant going around that evidently the Johnson & Johnson vaccine isn't fully protecting. They don't know very much, but from what I've seen on Twitter from a couple of experts, the Johnson & Johnson, they're not sure if it's going to be able to protect people against this. I think it's called the Delta variant, is sending people to the hospital at a much higher rate.
Yeah, my mom got the Delta variant.
Oh,
and
no.
She was fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine.
Wow. Now, what symptoms did she have?
Yeah, I mean, it was luckily pretty benign. She was fine. She was a bit, she was kind of in bed for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Not even that really. So, I mean, it is proof that the kind of the vaccine,
right.
But
it did help.
It, even if you get it, like, you know, it's worth having the vaccine,
yes.
Because it makes it way less severe.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole point of getting the vaccine, right? The vaccine is not necessarily 100% effective, but it's almost 100% effective in stopping hospitalization.
Right.
So, and the Delta variant is the one major one ripping through the UK at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, look, it's like, I'm happy to just, what does the CDC say right now? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the best scientists? What are they saying right now? Mm-hmm. You know, and given the best available evidence right now, right? So it's like, science is always evolving, science is always changing, right? As more information comes in, we're making decisions based on the best evidence available. It's not necessarily perfect, you know. A reasonable adult understands this.
Yeah.
An unreasonable adult thinks it's a big conspiracy theory.
Yeah, right? Well, that's what she said. She said she doesn't need the booster. She said the doctor said she doesn't need the booster because the vaccine companies just want to make money, and that's what the boosters are all about. And I'm like,
right.
I felt like asking her, do you get a flu shot every year? I think she gets a flu shot every year.
Right. It's like they why do they choose this one thing? Like, there's no conspiracy theories over the flu. There's no conspiracy theories, you know, over the common cold. Are these giant government conspiracy theories? Are all the medications created by pharmaceutical companies, are they all part of a mass organized conspiracy to vaccinate you with microchips? And I mean, it's just nonsense. Like, I mean, the thinking is so poor. It's so stupid that you can barely follow the logic. It doesn't make any sense unless you think that every government on the planet, every big pharmaceutical company, every healthcare organization, they're all in cahoots with tightly organized, sinister cabal of, you know, big pharma executives and nefarious government executives who are trying to control the world population through a vaccine. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's so stupid that you can't, you know, there's no point really in engaging with it, right?
No.
That's the issue. And I think, you know, just do what the CDC suggests. Like, mm-hmm. I take my mask off around fully vaccinated people inside. If we're all fully vaccinated and we're inside, I take my mask off. If there's someone who's not vaccinated and they are uncomfortable, you know, I will wear a mask or I will remove mm-hmm. myself from the situation, depending on what they want and what mm-hmm. they ask for. you know, just be smart and respectful of other people. I don't think it's a bit, it's not such a big deal. Like, you know, you prefer people wear masks. I'll put a mask on. You know,
exactly.
It's not that big a deal.
It's, and the thing is, you know, I mean, she was kind of getting to the point where so many of them do, where they get like aggressive if you want to choose to wear a mask. And it's like, you know, I mean, how many times have you seen pictures over the years of people in China wearing masks? All the, you know, that's their regular, that's their normal. They wear it to prevent getting sick. And I think that we're going to see some of that over here. I don't know how far it's going to go, but I know myself that I hate, I mean, I'm usually the person who goes out of their way to avoid getting sick. And, you know, like, for instance, when I was in acting class, there was this guy who showed up and he was so sick, and I was one of the leaders telling him to leave. You know, there was a couple other people in my class kind of, you shouldn't be here, because it was an acting class. It wasn't imperative that he was there, and he was going to get everyone else sick. And so it's like, I don't want to get sick. I hate getting the freaking flu. And so I could see, and I don't know if I'll do it, but I could see in the wintertime when we're no longer freaking out about COVID, you know, perhaps wearing a mask if I go to the grocery store, or if, you know, obviously if I go out to dinner, I can't do it. So I wouldn't wear a mask in every situation, but I can definitely, you know, see certain situations where, okay, when it's cold and flu season, if I just wear a mask to the grocery store, then I'm a little bit more protected than normal, and I'm cutting my chances of getting sick. So what's wrong with that? And, you know, but it's like this whole like anger at you for wearing a mask. And then the asinine, idiotic responses about how, you know, you're breathing in whatever they're, I don't know what the fuck they're saying, but they're basically saying that it's unhealthy for you to breathe in your own air. And it's like, okay, well, doctors, you know, are operating for 12 and 15 hours at a time wearing masks and they're fine. So it's like this idiotic response that's just politically driven. And I know so many other families are going through this because it's so hard. It's very hard to deal with someone that you love. Maybe you're not their best friend or whatever, but you love them. I mean, this person, I have a history from when I was a little girl. She took care of me and she was kind to me. She's always been kind to me, always. And, you know, she is sucked up into this. I mean, she's not into Q because she doesn't really understand how to use the internet. So she listens to talk radio, and that's where she gets her info. I don't even think she watches Fox News, but she says she doesn't, and I pretty much believe her, because I think that she was a huge Rush Limbaugh fan, and clearly he's gone. So I'm assuming that she's probably moved on to Mark Levin, or God only knows who else she listens to. But and she like quotes Rand Paul, and she likes Ted Cruz. So I just,
ooh, dear.
Yeah, it's like all the way. I mean, she's not Q, but boy, I think that if she had more internet savvy, she probably would be Q. And that's so sad, because you see somebody, I mean, there was that documentary, The Brainwashing of My Dad. Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't.
Highly recommended. I highly, highly, highly recommend. You know, I mean, basically this woman's father, who was a liberal man, was, you know, only watching Fox and listening to talk radio. Talk radio had a lot to do with it, because a lot of these people who are listening are on commutes and they're alone in their car. So it's this very, just like with the podcast, it's very personal. And, you know, when you're listening to it, you feel like you're there. And you feel like that talk radio host is talking directly to you. And so it's very, very manipulative. And it's really just so, it's overwhelming.
Scary.
Yeah.
it's scary how this can happen to people. But, you know, I think also, I mean, I with various family members who I have radically different opinions to, like, I have learned over time just to avoid talking about them, because it's kind of like, you're not going to change their minds.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do about it. You can kind of gently drop in a few nuggets here and there of kind of reasoning and facts, and maybe that will make them, help them to think slightly differently about stuff. But I think if you're already there, you know, if you've been listening to that stuff for 50 years, I mean, there's probably not much hope that it's gonna change.
Yeah, you know, I know. Especially when they're like 70. When they're 70, it's like it's doubtful.
Yeah, it's not going to change. And I think, you know, we've got to navigate this. You know, we've got to understand that we've got MAGAs in our life, yeah. MAGA family members, that kind of thing. You know, how do we deal with it? You have to kind of separate. There's a political movement, yes. And there are individuals within that political movement,
yeah.
who we have to deal with. But, you know. I'm always a fan of attacking the powerful. So the average MAGA person, I don't have a huge amount of interest in. It's the manipulators. Those are the people who I have a real problem with.
Yeah, yeah.
The Tucker Carlson.
Tuckums, you know, as Joy Reid likes to call
them.
Yes,
Tuckums. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I do love Joy Reid. At least she has a sense of humor about it. I mean, I know every night I watch a little bit of Chris Hayes before I have to turn it off. And I, you know, I feel guilty for not watching Rachel Maddow right now, but I just kind of can't. I get toward the end of the day and I'm like, oh my God, I'm oversaturated with news. And I know she has so much useful information and I should be watching it, but I just cannot take it in. But Joy at least is funny.
Yeah.
And Chris is always screaming like, oh my God, everybody, pay the fuck attention to what's happening because we are in big fucking trouble. So I don't know. But I'm going to end this. I know that, first of all, I just want to say thank you for coming back. I appreciate it. I'm sorry, not sorry that I'm like in this once again kind of funk. I'm not crying. At least I'm not crying, but I'm concerned. And so it's like every day, like you said, there are ups and downs. And so, I wish that I could have you on I will have you on another day when I'm feeling more happy and up. So there's that.
Well, any time, Kimberly. No, I love coming on the show. It's great fun. And thanks so much for having me.
Well, of course. But before you go, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
So you can follow me on Twitter. It's at The Daily Banter. That's where I'm on Twitter. The newsletter would be great if you could subscribe to us. You don't have to pay for anything. You can if you want, but you can subscribe to the newsletter. We send out free newsletters. And that's thebanter.substack.com. That's where I write, and that's where Bob is as well. Bob's on the Banter newsletter every week as well, and so is Justin Rosario. Find us there, and on Facebook. Facebook is /The Daily Banter, so we're there as well. But Twitter and on the newsletter is the best place to catch us.
Awesome. And if you want to get those links, just go to the Patreon page to the show, and that's patreon.com/startmeup. This show will be one of the first three up a little bit. Well, by the time you're listening to it, it will be up. So I was going to say a little bit later, but you know what? It'll already be up. So anyway, and that way you can click the links and get to Ben's pages quickly. And then you can find me on Twitter at author Kimberly, KimberlEY. Don't forget that extra E. I always say it. And then of course my books are on Amazon. I've written about teen abortion and women's rights and virginity. So go check out those books. And once again, Ben, thank you so much.
All right, Kimberly, talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.